Hello and welcome to the Pals Anime Lounge, a podcast where a bunch of pals get together to talk about anime. I'm your host Ace, and joining me are Artura.
Hello everyone.
And Gozigoz.
Holy shit!
In today's episode, we're talking about The Legend of Heroes Trails of Cold Steel Northern War, aka The Legend of Heroes Sen no Kisuke Northern War, a series that's only a handful of episodes in. Since this is based on a video game, we've decided to cover it using the three-episode rule, like we did during season one of this very podcast. Like previous podcasts about new shows, I won't be as detailed in my synopsis, so do check out the anime if we've piqued your interest. It was produced by Tatsunoku Production, the studio behind Speed Racer, Science Ninja Team Gatchaman, aka Battle of the Planets, and a whole lot of stuff, none of it super famous. I couldn't find out how many episodes long this will be, but it's either 12, 13, 24, or, you know, 100. Legend of Heroes Trails of Cold Steel Northern War has a My Animalist score of 6.21. This is based on The Legend of Heroes Trails of Cold Steel, developed by Nihon Falcom. It's part of a JRPG series known as Trails, which is part of a bigger The Legend of Heroes franchise, of which you're supposed to play literally every one of them to understand the story fully. At least that's what people commented on our 6 out of 10 scoring review for Trails of Cold Steel 3. This anime is set between Cold Steel 2 and Cold Steel 3.
We did one of the OVAs from this series, right?
Yeah, it wasn't part of this. It was part of a different sub-franchise of Legend of Heroes, but it was a Legend of Heroes show.
It's the same universe, basically.
Apparently, yeah. I mean, in the Trails of the Sky, they weren't allowed to go to the surface of the planet, or they couldn't, or something. There were floating islands, and in this one, it seems that everyone's actually on the surface of the planet, so...
Well, I looked at the Trails of Cold Steel 4, and the protagonist from the Sky one is a companion.
Really? That's interesting.
Yeah.
My synopsis for these three episodes is, when a teenage soldier keeps saving lives, she's punished multiple times and sent on a secret mission. Arturo, what do you have?
When it's the story of Lavian Winslet, a young girl who joins the Northern Jaegers to defend North Embry and protect her hometown from the Erebonian Empire.
Okay, and Gozigoz?
It's Hero War between Northumbria and Erebonia. When Northumbria is all out of heroes, a girl joins the hero military as a fuck you to her hero grandfather, who was a hero who betrayed, and she goes on a hero spy mission to find an enemy hero, and it turns into a farce.
Both much better than mine, I will admit.
Honestly, I really like how Gorsus is always technically correct.
The first episode opens on a child running through wheat fields to her grandpa before it's engulfed in flames while a woman looks on. We cut to Northumbria State, 850 sleg southeast of the state capital, Hylask? I was lost immediately. I literally wrote that.
Yeah, honestly, the thing started and I was like, I'm so confused already. That didn't change. Ever.
Some soldiers shoot monsters, clearing the way so they can march onwards. As they march, one of them throws snowballs at our protagonist, a rookie soldier, and then whines about being on a simple delivery mission. Him and his mates, one of them named Ovano and the other Tak, gives us a ton of exposition, including about an elite soldier named Rogan, aka the Aurora Phenomenon.
Sounds like a taste of a smoothie or something. Aurora Phenomenon.
The rookie spots a monster hole and goes to investigate, Tak and Rogan following, and finding a bunch of monsters assaulting a walled village. Backup arrives and they kill all the monsters, but are attacked by a massive monster, the rookie killing it with a sword after everyone had run out of bullets. In the battle, the protagonist's helmet was damaged and came off, revealing it to be a woman. But we knew this because we'd heard her grunts and her build made it super obvious.
Well, the other option was that she was a tiny little boy.
Which, you know, was very possible.
Yeah, I didn't know for a while.
Yeah, honestly, it may have been obvious, but I somehow didn't realize And then they revealed it as a girl. I was like, it wasn't so much of a, but it was more of a, oh, of course, how did I not see that? Oh my gosh.
We then get the titles with it's an alright song, I think. I didn't hate it.
The song was good.
It was so long, though.
It is, yeah.
I thought the song was good, but the animation wasn't great. Just too much stuff.
Yeah, I can see that, yeah. Later at the Capitol, Heliask, whatever. I'm not going to use the word again. The protagonist loses pay for 3 months for defying orders, and we finally discover her name is Lavi when Ivano and Tak drag her off to repay them because they also lost pay because they followed her example. After the trio eat, they get an exposition dump from a civilian they saved earlier, who comments that they may be too young to know about something that happened 27 years ago. Nodoi. Apparently a white pillar rose out of the ocean and turned people and animals into salt in an incident known as the Salt Pail Incident.
That's a bit on the nose, isn't it?
Didn't they say that it was also known as another thing? And I was like, just pick one.
Yeah, it's known as this. Also, this is like, why?
just use one name. Like, you're wasting one of those names could have used for something else.
And it's also known as blah, blah, blah. Yeah, okay. Apparently riots broke out, but they were eventually quelled by some heroes, presumably in one of the other Trails of Cold Steel games. Suddenly, Rogan turns up to much applause, the aforementioned, it sounds like a drink. He tells Lavi that he knows Vlad Winslet, her grandfather, and apparently one of the heroes we just heard about. He then addresses the crowd to complain about how the heroes haven't done anything since saving the country, and apparently Crossbell State had been annexed by the Erebonian Empire, and he was going to lead a revolution against them. And that brought us to the end of the first episode. Again,
I mean, I was really shocked. I kept expecting things to start. Like, I felt so lost all of the time. And then the episode ended, and I was like, I still don't feel like I know what we're doing.
Yeah, I know a lot about the world. I don't know much about these characters we're supposed to be, you know, following in this show.
It's the same thing that happened in Salamander.
And in fact, you may have noticed that I mentioned two character names a couple of times, Tak and Ivano. They never come up again.
And, like, about those names, right? Like, Ivano, kind of Russian-sounding, and Tak, clearly Japanese. So, like, is the country based on Russia, or is it Japan? Or is it Japan-Russia? Russia-Japan?
Their country is not based on Russia. I'll get to that in a minute.
I also heard about Borscht, but yes. I don't...
Northern Borscht.
Is Borscht Russian? I don't think it is it?
I think of it as a Russian dish, but I couldn't be able to swear to it's the only place where you can get Borscht. Anyway, the next episode we open on Lavi at his training ground, shooting targets. She'd been left behind for some reason when the rest of the team left on an unknown mission, so she's stuck with the trainees and instructors. We then cut to an opera house where the government is having a meeting just off to the side behind a box seat for some reason while the opera's going on. Yes, I have no idea why anyone is doing anything or why anything is happening. And as Arthur has just said, neither did she.
Just before we move on, can we cycle back to the like instructor thing? Where she shoots a target, some rookies come to her and say, oh, how did you do that? And she goes, aim well? And they're like, oh my god, yeah, you're a genius! That's verbatim what happened.
Yep. Yep. The secret to aiming well is aim well?
I really like the confidence she said it with, too. Aim well? It's like, yes, thank you, Lavi. I did not think of that. Oh my gosh.
I mean, they clearly didn't because they were so impressed. You'd think they would be taught that in, like, I don't know, early on, before they get armor and weapons.
First lesson, aim well.
Here, have a gun. You don't know how to use it? No problem. Here, have a gun.
It's the American way.
I didn't want to say.
It would. I imagine there's a lot of those scenes from Starship Troopers where they train with live ammo and one shoots the other in the head. I imagine that happens all of the time there.
Yeah. But this this government meeting, it's a special joint meeting, we're told, including Rogan, who we were told in the last episode isn't the highest ranking person in the army. So what the hell is he doing there? They are discussing the annexation of Crossbell, and Jaina introduces us to the important people who I scrolled too far on my notes and missed the bit before the titles of the episode where we saw Crossbell City, where we were introduced to Lord Rufus Albera, the first governor of the newly annexed Crossbell. So in this this opera house scene, we're told by this Jaina character about the Blood and Iron Chancellor Giliath Osborne and Governor General Rufus Albera. We're not told many more details about it, but I will be honest, they talked and talked.
And talked. It's like, yeah, I did want to participate in this real, very close, true-to-life meeting of a bunch of people I don't know, with a bunch of nations and empires I don't know, and I don't want this.
Yeah, the more that they talked, the more that the Erebonian Empire sounded like Russia and their attempts to annex Ukraine.
And it was like generally like watching Star Wars prequels again.
Yeah, the thing is about the boring parts of Phantom Menace is they're only like 4 minutes long, but it feels like half the movie. We cut from that riveting scene to the camp and are introduced to Talion and Isiria, instructors with light-coloured hair and purple highlights. One of them might not have been an instructor. Again, I didn't know anything about anything. We finally learn that Lavi was sent back to the camp because her previous disobeying orders in the first episode wasn't the first time she'd done it. So she's been punished by being reassigned to be an instructor. Lavi challenges Talion to a fight to prove to herself that she can do whatever she wants or something. And then she wins because Talion hesitates and not because she was better.
And also because plot armor.
Someone apparently steals a truck and Talion stops it with his bare hands to protect two soldiers, thanks to something called Enigma, which he needed Supervisor Marty's permission to use and was activated on like a smartphone. Lavi then runs after the truck, so Isiria shoots the tires out, presumably to give her a chance. Not that it matters, because Talion grabs a truck and pulls up alongside Lavi, so she climbs into the gun turret and destroys a watchtower to stop the truck, while Talion grabs the driver from the runaway truck to save him from presumably crashing into the watchtower.
All the while, this is kind of like cutting into the kind of like the Congress and the, what they're talking, the meeting. And then it's just like, I didn't super understand how these two were connected at all. And either show me one in one long scene or like not both at the same time. I just got lost because I was trying to find the meaning, the connection.
Yeah, my next note is that's the reason I didn't say, and then we cut to, because that was, it was all intercut together, as you say, and there were a lot of scenes from the opera house where the leader of the country, Master Glark, what a stupid name, had just announced to the gathered underlings that they weren't going to attack Erebonia first, they were going to wait and see what happened. So the tower collapses and lands on the ground and causes the opera house to shake and makes everyone in the audience panic, as well as some of the underlings jump under the table. We're not going to attack, we're going to see what happens. Kaboom! Ah. We cut to Lavi, Talion, Marty and Isiria being told off by Jaina. As punishment, Lavi and co. are being sent to Erebonia to find information on the hero of the Empire who pilots a mecha, and their first task was to go to a party. We also discover that Lavi is 15 years old.
Oh yeah, it's just casually mentioned 2 episodes in already. It's like, oh, by the way, your protagonist is 15. Anyway, bye.
Yes, you joined us when you were 15 3 months ago, and okay, go on this secret
mission. First of all, weird way to mention that. It's like, yeah, you remember when you were 15 3 months ago and you're still 15 now, 3 months later? And also kind of, you know, proves that we weren't entirely wrong to assume that the soldier was a teenage, skinny teenage boy, just that we're wrong in the boy part.
Still be a boy, for all we know.
That is a good point.
The episode ends and there's a post-credit scene where Rayna watches a robot shoot balloons at the opera house. That was weird.
That's the weirdest thing that happened, and we have much more to talk about.
The third episode opens in the port city of Ordis in Erebonia, where Isseria and Marty hand over an invitation to get into the party while Talion and Lavi look in through an upstairs window. Did either of you notice whose party this was?
I did not.
It was written on the invitation.
Hitler?
Mr. and Mrs. Ambassador were invited to Scare Crow's party. Scare-Crow.
Wait, I don't get it. Why? Is it because of Scarecrow?
I've no idea.
Call the Batman.
Well, speaking of, we'll get to that. We get a scene of them trying on clothes before this, before Lavi leaves because she's bored of a really important mission to save the country. And then we get the titles.
Well, yeah, you know, that's what happens when you give such an important mission to a 15-year-old that has been in the party for 3 months.
We see Lavi wandering around town and absolutely astounded by a popcorn vendor before stealing some from a child. Okay, he offers it to her, but she still should have bought her own.
I love the way you worded
it. Also, I want to mention that the moment they get the mission to go spying around, they're just in the other country. It was that simple to get there. They infiltrated instantly. They just went on the bus or called an Uber and said, to the other country, please. And they're there.
Well, it's a neighboring country, so I imagine you're allowed to get there with a passport. They weren't in open hostilities.
Oh, I saw all those scenes
past of... tense. Are you foreshadowing something, Ace?
I saw all those scenes of tanks exploding and I thought they were openly fighting.
No, I thought that was the tanks were from Crossbell. And that's when the mecha appears. And in the first episode, they mentioned that the hero who pilots the mecha is why they had annexed Crossbell so easily.
Fair enough.
I mean, this is just, you know, to show how badly they explain anything, that we were all assuming like something different because no one knows whether we're at peace or not with this country.
Talion manages to track Lavi down, but she tries to fob him off by saying, no, this is part of the mission, before legging it while he's distracted. Moments later, she is shocked by ice cream, and because of the language barrier, manages to order a 15-stack ice cream cone. Fair play to the shop. Rather than say, that's not possible, they actually do it.
To be honest, that was so ridiculous, it made me laugh.
Oh yeah. There were some funny bits. I won't deny that. After almost being assaulted by two men, Lavi watches a puppet show. My next note is, what the fuck is this show?
Well, the Joker came up with it, so, you know.
Luckily, the puppet show gives some child-friendly information about the country's hero in the Mecca, so afterwards, Lavi follows the clown in charge back to his warehouse. The clown and his army of furries board a blimp to get revenge against the people gathered at the party because it turns out they're Batman villains.
This is my favorite sentence you've said this year.
I mean, tell me a sentence that you've never heard before. Lavi grabs a rope to hold onto the blimp while the furries run outside, throwing dynamite from inside their suits. Another sentence I'd never thought I'd ever write. Lavi tackles the clown on the blimp, but that doesn't stop him from smashing through the window into the party and making a speech before she kicks him while calling Lavian kick. Very
in the most rude. Bored voice ever.
Yeah, she did. She couldn't be bothered to do that. They fight while Talion beats up furries outside, though she finishes him off by shooting a chandelier and making it drop on him. This somehow does not kill him.
Yeah, I thought he stood like under the pointy bit, and like I expected him to be a fucking bloody splat after that.
Yeah,
but no.
The size of that thing. She's presented with a 150-year-old jade necklace for saving everyone.
For a second there, I thought they were giving her a medal.
We just so happen to have a medal.
Just randomly.
I thought the same. I was like, are you kidding me? How were you guys prepared for this?
I mean, it's Gotham City, so...
But then the second best thing happened and they gave her a 150-year-old jewelry because she saved a bunch of rich guys. I'd never expect that to happen. Or, like, the Empire is just fucking amazing. After that moment, I just imagined that she would find her grandfather there and be like, shit, Grandpa, now I get why you deserted. Let's go.
Have you seen this popcorn machine?
And they give you fucking necklaces for nothing.
They give you necklaces for murdering clowns.
Let's go, Grandpa. I'm not mad at you anymore.
The episode ends with them walking along the docks while being watched by someone riding on a flying drone. And that takes us to the
who was earlier mentioned as a goddess, which confused me, but you know, whatever. Just another line, another one in the long list of things that were confusing me in this anime.
So, was this a good adaptation?
Well, I want to hear your thoughts. So, well, I was so lost. Like, I heard The Legend of Heroes and I was like, oh, we watched this before and then it's nothing like the other one, so.
While I'm sure it does a good job with the world, there were no turn-based battles, but at least... there's a mecha, and there's a mecha in the second game from the gameplay I watched.
Well, from what I can understand, that's not even, like, that's not an adaptation of a story from a game. It's adaptation of, well, the world. This is the same, but the story is what happened between the game 2 and 3 or something like that.
Yes, that's true, but they are making a mobile game based on this anime. But since it's all set in the same franchise, we can judge it based on, is it a good adaptation of the franchise as a whole?
Just look at what my reaction was to the Trails of Sky and just copy and paste.
So, based on the first three episodes, is it a Yatta, a Nanny, or a Baka? Arthur?
Honestly, this is a Baka, a Nanny. I think it's going to Nanny for me. It had a funny moments. I really like the animation, but I'm so lost. It feels like I'm learning a new, like, language or geography, and I was horrible at geography in school. Like, so they're like, you know, oh, you know, this empire and that empire and this person and that. I'm like, can you explain to me one of the things you're talking about, please? So that
no, it, you like, have to play the 12 games set before this.
But otherwise, you know, it was fun. It was funny, and I kind of like the characters and the stories. So it's a Nanny thrown towards a Baka for me.
And goes.
Nanny, like it. It was entertaining, but to me, but for the wrong reasons.
Okay, for me, I'd also say a Nanny because, well, for reasons you've just heard. I quite like how the soldiers aren't insidious. Like the people, they're actually heroes to the people. People are happy to see these soldiers trampling all over the place. In a lot of anime and fiction, the hero starts off as a soldier and then they find out, oh, actually there's something wrong with the institution and now I've got to turn against it. And I mean, that might still happen later in the series, but for now, it was nice to see that wasn't a trope they were going for.
Yeah, it's something so common. You have such a good point there. That's why I kind of liked it, but kind of didn't. They did a good job in some aspects, but some others is like, okay, thanks. That didn't explain anything. But I do really like how they presented the soldiers. So you make a really good point there.
I know I shouldn't really judge the world since... I haven't played 106 games of this, but when they came out with the with the apology letter, it was written on a scroll and rolled up. And yet in the credits and in the third episode, they have cameras and photo paper. Why are you using scrolls that you have photo paper?
We also have mechs and guns and like superpowered soldier abilities, so
I'm fine with a mix of magic and mecha. That's Vision of Escaflowne, nothing new to me. Why would you use scrolls? You clearly have paper. You have photo paper.
I thought that it was like the difference between the whatever the Borsh country and the Empire. In the Borsh, it's not called the Borsh country, but I forgot the name. The Borsh country, they have scrolls, and in the Empire, they have iPhones. I mean, cameras.
I do think that you make a good point, because I think the scene where she's walking through the city is kind of to show like how everyone's kind of happy, and then it's in contrast to the war-torn place Genos as her home. So maybe you make a good point there, and that's just subtle hints that I'm missing. But all I'm seeing is scrolls and paper and camera.
I think they should have focused more on the characters and not the background stuff.
I agree. Yeah, it feels like they have to be more forthcoming with what they're trying to tell us. Because again, I haven't played the 1,582 games.
I think the number of games is increasing as we talk.
No, it's your imagination.
We've always said there's 6,000 game scores. I don't know what you're talking about.
But yeah, we start the first episode and it's like on the ground soldiers, and like I'm instantly in because I can relate to like people on the ground doing stuff, and then they just lose me. Instead of staying with those characters, they go all around the place.
Yeah, the problem is that, as we've constantly said, nothing's explained. And I mean, poor Ivano and Tak, I don't know which one's which.
Yeah, same. I really like them, but it's like one of them is a little taller, I guess.
They had a big part in the first episode, and it's like, yeah, and now we're never going to see them again or tell you which one was which. Like, if they'd split up at any point, I wouldn't have known which name to write.
But no, they just got played off like a joke, and I really like the characters too, like, I like how comedic they were, even though they were a bit silly, but they were nice, and I was excited to explore more with them, and then suddenly it's like, anyway, Ivanto and Kak are gone, and I'm like, wait, what?
They were, like, I remember in Salamander, the Prince Britain, the Captain Britain had, like, two minister aides with him that were basically comic relief, and they were giving more. They were given more than the two soldiers in this.
But yeah. Did they actually get names?
Yeah, I think they did.
Oh, I don't
remember. I don't remember either, but I think they did.
I remembered them because I hated them so much. I mean, I just wish there was no parts with them, so I remembered them. I despised them in Salamander.
Honestly, I'm just really heart-wrenched because it has a lot of potential. I really like what I got to see, but it's just confusing. I have more chance like grabbing a random show and turning it on and learning more about that world.
Maybe the game will be better.
The games, you mean?
Oh, Ace said that they're making a game based on the anime, which wasn't based on any single game.
True, I meant more like, you know, the games would be better at explaining things to us.
The 7,000 games, yeah.
Maybe the first one? I don't know. Fuck it.
Does this deserve its My Anime List score of 6.21?
Unfortunately, yeah, if not just a little bit lower. Because, again, I'm just lost. I think it probably would be better if I actually knew anything about the world and characters, but at the moment I'm like, this is a turn-based game, and I don't know anyone or anything at all. So I think 6.2 is fair, if not just lower.
It's probably fine.
Yeah, my note is currently yes, but it's showing promise for the future at least. I mean, not every episode is going to be and this country and this person that you're never going to hear from again. And
yeah, I really agree with you there. I think it has a lot of growth potential, but at the moment it's not very good or inviting to newcomers, and that's a problem.
Right, that brings us to the end of our episode. Thank you for joining me, Arturo and Guzguz.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you. Hi.
Thank you for listening to the Pals Only Lounge, and better yet, thank you for subscribing wherever you found this episode. You can find more from us on GameGoon.com, finding us on social media, or listening to the Greencast podcast. And until next time, game on.